Are you tired of your content not getting the reach it deserves? Change that at Grow With Video Summit. From May 23rd through the 25th, join industry leaders like Gary Vee, Ollie Abdaal, Patrick Bet-David, Cody Sanchez, and more for strategies that will elevate your visibility and engagement. So go to summit.thinkmedia.com to secure your ticket. Just click the link in the description or go to summit.thinkmedia.com.
The number one biggest mistake is thinking that it's all about you. It's all about what the brand is trying to accomplish. Brands are being very careful about their marketing spend, but you really have to understand that influencer marketing changes based on the scale of the organization. You have to understand what the brand's goals are when you collaborate with them.
If I have a small channel, can I land a deal?
He was a YouTuber. He had less than 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. The brand was stoked to work with him. They paid him a bunch of money and they didn't care at all how many followers he had. And you want to know why?
Welcome back to the Think Media Podcast. I am so fired up for this episode because we're going to be talking about how to land paid brand deals, massive opportunities that exist right now for micro and nano influencers and YouTube channels of all sizes, tactical tips for how to reach out and pitch brands, and you're going to be learning from an expert with a decade of experience. If you haven't met Justin Moore yet, he's a sponsorship coach and the founder of Creator Wizard. Him and his wife, April, have been full-time creators for over 9 years and have personally made over $4 million working with brands. He's run an agency for years that have helped creators like you earn an additional $3 million in brands. And today, I know him as the foremost expert for brand deals, paid sponsorships, all of the new and unique opportunities that are happening right now. So definitely buckle your seatbelt and stick around until the end of this episode. Justin, welcome back to the show.
What's up, Sean? Glad to be here, dude.
Super fired up. It's a new year, new opportunities, new possibilities, and I can't wait to get into all kinds of tactics. But I want to actually start with a story that you have from, do you have a micro or nano influencer that you've helped land a brand deal? And this is what I looked up. Correct me if I'm wrong. So what is a micro or a nano influencer? I think nano is less than 10,000 subs, 1,000 to 10,000, and micro is less than 100,000, 10,000 to 100,000. So I know we have people that are just starting, but I think that one of the most relevant, of course it scales up, is just this idea of, if I have a small channel, can I land a deal? Do you have an example of a story of somebody that's micro or nano and a deal they landed?
Sure. So you mentioned at the top that I ran this influencer agency for many years, and this is what we did day in, day out. A brand or a larger agency would approach our company and say, hey, we want to work with creators on a campaign. Can you help us find this like unicorn, right? And because this is the value proposition that we oftentimes had, was we had this roster of people, we know a lot of people in the industry and so on. And so one time a very large phone company approached our agency with this challenge. They said, hey, we know that our products resonate with consumers in the FIRE community, right? The financial independent, retirement early. But we're really struggling to find people who could credibly speak to that niche, essentially. So help us, essentially, was the charge. And so we went out there, we did a bunch of digging, and we found a creator named Mike. At the time, he was a YouTuber. He had less than 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, Sean, less than 1,000. And the brand was stoked to work with him. They paid him a bunch of money, and they didn't care at all how many followers he had. And you want to know why? Is because Mike didn't just talk about budgeting. He talked about budgeting for active duty military. Budgeting for active duty military. So he had a very, very specific niche. And you know what the brand did? After Mike ended up posting that YouTube video, they turned around and they used the footage from that video to run a bunch of ads to reach other consumers like him. And so this is something I talk about a lot, which is that you have to understand what the brand's goals are when you collaborate with them. Because in this instance, the brand did not care that he was only getting hundreds of views on his YouTube videos. They cared about who he was and who he represented for their larger campaign.
Man, that's such a powerful insight. And my next question is, or frame for this conversation, is what's the state of influencer marketing and paid brand partnerships in 2024? What's the opportunity? But actually, before, I want to hone in on an area that you just hit that it's been top of mind for me, which is UGC creators. So That might be a new concept at the top of the podcast. And I've been sharing this in some of our trends. So by definition, UGC, user-generated content, if you put yourself in the shoes of the social media manager, the marketing manager of a business or a brand, one of the things they're trying to leverage is just regular everyday people that might tag their brand, take a photo of their brand, take a selfie with the Stanley mug, take a, you know, or make a video with it. But there's this new way of earning money and going full-time on YouTube of being a UGC creator, which is essentially a way to position yourself to create raw, authentic, a little bit different because yes, you're paid, but you're rallying somebody who's deeply passionate about the product and has honed their content creation skills. To your point, not necessarily because posting that on their channel or their platforms is going to get the reach, but because they want, this is like the only kind of ads I get right now. Even more so, we're watching Fargo season 7, my wife and I. Season 5. Insane, by the way. True story, right? As all the seasons are, but so amazing on FX. Great show. So I'm watching it on Hulu and I don't understand how Hulu works because I'm like, I'm trying to pay for the most expensive plan, but I still get ads.
Right.
So in between the episodes, I'm watching all these ads. And one of the things that's interesting is even the style of a brand like HelloFresh cooking or some of the other, the style of ads are vloggy. Phone, mm-hmm. kind of vertical, even in a horizontal context, and a lot of authentic, I would assume, who knows, you know, like, but regular everyday people that are like, it tastes so good, and they're opening up the box, user-generated content, raw everyday right. content. Expand on just that before we maybe then widen the frame to the state of the whole influencer marketing industry. But what do you see the opportunity for UGC creators, and what is your understanding of them?
Yeah, so it's what's old is new again, I think. Like, this was the buzzword du jour like 10, 15 years ago was like, oh, everyone, UGC. And in this era, it was actual customers, right? And that's still that, you know, the UGC term still kind of covers that. But there's like these professional, you can professionalize yourself to be like, okay, no, I'm a UGC creator and this is what I do for a living. I'm really good at making hooks and telling, you know, distilling the key messages into something really punchy. And then I have calls to action at the end. And you're just like really good at making good thumb stopping content. And so there's been this resurgence, I think, of creators who have gotten really good at this type of thing. You know, there's this concept that I talk about called the sponsorship continuum, because I have a lot of creators that come to me who are micro creators and nano creators and things like that. And they say, I just really want to get a sponsorship. And I sit them down and I say, look, the types of pitches and the types of brands that you want to collaborate with is going to change throughout your journey as a creator. In the beginning, when you are smaller, if the pitch that you make when you reach out to a brand is, hey, I've got 1,000 YouTube subscribers, or I get a couple hundred views per video, collaborate with me, pay me, that's not that compelling of a pitch to them because it's probably not going to move the needle. However, if instead, let's say you had the mindset of a UGC creator, where you say, okay, let me do an audit of this brand's holistic social persona. Let me go look at their Instagram. Let me look at, do they have a YouTube channel? Do they have a podcast? You know, does their brand have a podcast? Do they have a TikTok? Right. So you go out there and then you pitch them. And you say, hey, I think you could be telling your brand story in a much more compelling way. And I can actually do that for you. I can get you content on autopilot, 5-10 videos a month, pictures, whatever. I can stand up a podcast for you. I can start your TikTok channel. Right. And so that's what you're pitching in the early days of your creator journey. And oh, by the way, go check out my YouTube channel because that's my portfolio. Okay. So you look at your channel very differently when you're beginning. And so that's the beginning of the continuum. And we can go on, we can talk a little bit later about the other parts of the continuum, but like, that's how I think of when I think about UGC creators, that's what I think about.
Man, that's so actionable. And just so people know, in case they're busy on the move, you might be wondering, how do I craft this pitch and all of that stuff? Justin has a deep dive training at branddealclass.com. We'll link that up in the show notes as well. If you want some of the templates and, you know, point by point regarding to that. But this gets me excited because you're such an expert at this. And it really just says that actually the barrier to entry now is kind of lower than ever before because it's not just based on your influence. Saying that, of course, there's skill sets to learn. There's skill sets to develop because to be a UG creator, you want to be able to back up, of course, the pitch you're making and develop those marketing, storytelling. And that's true that I would argue 99% of businesses and brands, they don't usually even want to be on camera. They don't have the talent in-house. They don't know, even good marketing typically. They don't understand social media marketing. They don't understand YouTube. So the development of all of the above skill sets gives you such an edge, even if your influence isn't there yet. So anyways, check out branddealclass.com or just we'll mention that later and we'll come back to that. But before we get into some different tactics, give me your 30,000 foot view of the state of influencer marketing. Like, how much is it growing? Calling influencer marketing is sort of a weird term. That's what you kind of call it. Maybe you have better terms for it. Give me the big high level vision 2024. What do you see coming? What are some of the opportunities?
Yeah. So I think, you know, we'd be ignorant to ignore. I just said ignorant to ignore. That's awesome, Justin. we would be stupid to ignore the macroeconomic conditions, right? We've been in this weird in between. Are we in a recession? Are we not in a recession for like, it seems like 2 years. Right. You know, it's true. Like brands are being very careful about their marketing spend. They're being, you know, careful about the types of decisions that they make, the types of commitments that they make, how long those commitments are going to last. Whereas before it might have been an easier thing to lock in a longer term 3, 6, 12 month partnership with the brand. A lot of brands are being more hesitant. They want to be more nimble to be able to reallocate their advertising budget, if need be, right? And so there's definitely, you know, lots of changes that have occurred in terms of tactically how brands are collaborating with creators. But, you know, influencer marketing is still alive and well. You mentioned that term. I mean, this is the parlance that most brands, most agencies use. Just, you only have to look so far as to the titles of the job titles inside brands. It's almost always influencer marketing manager at a consumer brand, or if it's a B2B brand, maybe it's a partnerships manager, this type of thing. So these are still kind of the terminology that they're using. But the way that I look at it is that you really have to understand that influencer marketing changes based on the scale of the organization. I was doing a live stream the other day and a creator was saying, I'm getting so frustrated because, the brands that are coming inbound to me that want to collaborate with me, all they care about is sales. All they care about is conversions, right? And they're driving a really hard bargain. They don't want to pay me a lot of money and all this stuff, right? And I gave him the following explanation, which is that brand ultimately has determined that influencer marketing is a bottom of funnel activity. They've determined that the reason that they want to work with influencers is to drive sales. But not all brands think that. There's a lot of brands who say, oh, we want to get brand awareness working with this creator. Or I mentioned earlier that example of Mike, the YouTuber. The reason that they wanted to collaborate with him is repurposing his content for paid advertising, you know, put it on their website and so on. And so the way I like to, you know, think about in these weird kind of economic times, you have to put your hat on as if you're the marketer. Imagine that you are a small mom and pop shop or a medium sized business. What are they spending their marketing money on, Sean? They're spending it on Facebook ads or Google pay-per-click ads or something like that. And so they're thinking, okay, we put $1,000 into Facebook and we get $2,000 on the other side of it, or $3,000, whatever, right? They're getting a profit, right? And so if you're coming to them and being like, pay me $1,000 to do an integration on a YouTube video, they're going to say, okay, well, can you guarantee that we're going to get $2,000 or $3,000 in sales out of that? And you say, no. And you're over here mad and indignant because they're not paying you. But you have to think, what if instead you said your pitch to them was, hey, I can help you make more compelling ads. It's going to be $3,000 or $2,000. And now they're, oh, I get it now, because this is what's important to me and what I understand.
That's super powerful. And so even if you don't want to be a marketer, it's still a skill you should probably lean into, but you got to think like one and develop those skills, because now you've packaged where you're able to pitch to them, understanding what does winning look like for them. And I looked up some stats on Influencer Marketing Hub. You know, this industry, in terms of how much money in the system, in 2016 was only $1.7 billion. Last year, 16.4, and in 2023, or rather 2022 was 16.4. It jumped 3 billion. I haven't seen the 2024 numbers yet, but every year businesses and brands, despite recession, it would seem, are going to be spending more on influencer marketing. The key, of course, is they're spending it more wisely. And so having a skill set like yours and learning what you know could be helpful. So what are some of the biggest mistakes, do you think? You touch on a few, you're pitching wrong, but what are some of maybe the biggest mistakes when people are like, I want to get sponsorships, I want to get brand deals, and their approach and their execution? What are some of the mistakes?
All right. The number one biggest mistake is thinking that it's all about you. Oh, I have this many views on my YouTube videos or this many, you know, listens on my podcast. I just need to go out there and find a sponsor. And that's the thrust of my pitch is, oh, I, you know, I'll look at all my giant vanity metrics, right? And the brand says, who the heck are you? And then they delete your email. They don't care because lots and lots of views, lots and lots of followers. That's a dime a dozen. There's lots of creators on the internet who have lots of views and metrics and all that stuff too. The way that you need to turn this on its head is it has nothing to do with you. It's all about what the brand is trying to accomplish. So if you can come inbound to the brand and say, and do a little bit of sleuthing, do a little bit of research and say, hey, I saw that you were running this campaign last January. Let's say we're sitting in September or something, right? Hey, I saw that you were running this campaign last January. Are you going to be running that campaign again this year? I would love to help you support that in the following ways. I can do 2 YouTube integrations. I can give you paid media rights. I can do XYZ, blah, blah, blah. Are you free on Thursday at 10 a.m. to talk about that? And the surprising thing about this is that brands do not have giant piles of money to pay random creators that reach out. But you know what they do have money for? They do have budgets for is their own initiatives. So your job is to go out there and surmise, make an inference of what is that it actually seem like is important to them and what are they allocating budgets for? And then let me go out and show how I can support them. And so this is a huge mistake is it's not about you. It's not about you at all. It's about how you can support them to accomplish their problems.
Media kits. Do you have to have one?
We didn't even mention this, or maybe we did a bit at the top, but like, you know, my wife and I have done over 500 sponsorships personally over the years. We've done this a ton. And of the last 100 deals that we've done, I think probably 3 or 4 asked to see a media kit. So okay. Very, very small percentage. However, I believe that the exercise of putting together a media kit is actually very helpful. So it forces you to think like, who am I? What is my value proposition? You know, what is the composition of my audience? How am I serving them? Because those are the questions that the brand, they want to know. They want to know, like, you know, if you can tell the story, if you can have a narrative behind why working with you versus another creator is so powerful, you want to be able to tell that story on a phone call with the brand, right? And if you don't know, you better figure it out. And so the act of putting together a media kit helps with that a lot. However, what I will caution everyone listening is if any of you have done this exercise and has a media kit, but you have a pricing page, like a rate card in that media kit, please delete it immediately. Okay. And one other reason, Sean, is that when a brand comes inbound to you and you'd be like, here's my media kit. Pick an option, right? That would be as if you went to the doctor and before they asked you anything about the symptoms that you were having, they said, here's your prescription for Prozac. And you said, I didn't tell you what my problems are. This is how brands feel when you give them your media kit with your rate card. How do you know whether they wouldn't have paid you $50,000 or $100,000 to be your 12-month long ambassador for their brand because you're the perfect fit? You don't know until you have a conversation.
That's a strong tactic right there. And I kind of want to open up a can of worms. Curious your perspective on this idea of creator, brand, audience, values alignment. So this is a major trend in business. 82% of shoppers now demand that a brand's values align with their own. Gen Z, younger millennials, Gen Z for sure is much more passionate about this. And I think in general, the way we resonate with brands, I'm up here in the Pacific Northwest recording this. And I think about, you're probably going to see somebody driving a Subaru Outback out here, North Face jacket on, Patagonia jacket, trying to reduce their carbon imprint. The whole region leans more liberal. And so there's certain mindset there, and there's certain brands that would really resonate if you align with that. And conversely, if you were outspoken about, say, conservative values, there might be some serious rub and they wouldn't necessarily want to work with you. Again, flipping it, we're in an election year. I think generally the negative of all this is that unfortunately things are getting more polarizing. My question to you is kind of unpack this. I guess there's a couple angles. Let's hit this first one. This is a self-awareness piece for a creator. A creator has a couple options. Do they not sanitize your content? I'm not like, there's this idea of like, we don't talk about politics or religion at the dinner table. That might not be relevant for your content. But what are your thoughts on like pros and cons of, is it good to have values in the creator career woven into your content? How would you coach somebody who like doesn't want to force it, but wonders if their content would be more powerful. And do you, if you're optimizing for being brand friendly, is it better to be more quiet? It's a lot of different angles. So, you know, about what you believe and what doors it might close, but also what doors it might open. So what are your thoughts on this idea of just kind of values and how a brand maybe aligns with your overall creator brand that you're building and what you talk about, what you're outspoken about?
Getting spicy here on the pod. Love it. All right. So let me answer this with a story. When I ran an agency, one of the kind of checklist items that we had to do when we were recruiting or looking for creators to partner with on particular campaigns was we had to do an audit of their social presence for certain brands to make sure that they were not saying crazy stuff on the internet, because every brand has this, need to, mitigate risk, right? Because they know that if they were to partner with a creator and that creator, during the course of the partnership or even in the past, if they said something crazy in eighth grade or something and it gets, pulled up again, and we're in the active, flight for a campaign, that brand is going to hear it. Their social channels are going to get blown up. Their customer service lines, how dare you partner with this creator who said this crazy, hyperbolic thing. And the brand gets dragged through the mud. Guilt by association, right? And so whether it's right or wrong that brands are doing this type of evaluation on you, you got to know it's happening. Okay. So whether or not you need to self sanitize, I'll let everyone else be the kind of the, make that judgment for themselves, but you should know that it absolutely is happening for a lot of the larger incumbent conglomerate type brands. They're very safe. They're very traditional. Whether it's right or wrong, left or right, they're going to be doing this analysis. And I want to be careful here there is a difference between talking about what you believe. Maybe it's a social issue or something. There's a difference between that and showing yourself in a YouTube thumbnail of your bender in Vegas with your buddies. There's a difference there, right? And I think that, or constantly swearing, like sometimes, like I'm not going to lie to you. Sometimes we would go to a creator's YouTube channel and their thumbnails scared the brand off. It wasn't even the content of the video. It was like, they look, they were dressed kind of risque, or they were drinking, or they were like, crazy hyper, but our agency was in the family space. And so there are some creators who like, their kids would be front and center crying, or they're injured, or they're bleeding in the hospital. And like, I'm not pointing any judgment here, but like there are some toy brands, large, family focused brands that didn't want to work with creators like that because they felt they just didn't want to touch that. And so again, every brand kind of has their different criteria or scale of like what they won't touch, but this is happening. It's absolutely happening. And so on the other side of it, I'm a creator myself. And so I also think about this of like, okay, I want to be myself. I want to be authentic. I want to, I don't want to purposely not talk about stuff because I'm concerned that I'm not going to get deals or whatever. So it's a balance. It's a line that you need to strike, especially if partnerships is a non-trivial part of your revenue as a creator. It's absolutely something you have to make that determination for yourself.
If you had to pick one between small and large brands preferring to lean more neutral or actually preferring to align with a creator that has a stance, most of the time, do brands prefer just neutral?
95% of the time, neutral.
I think. So 95%. So while of course we might see examples, and sometimes these places can become, they can have huge influence. I think about like Daily Wire, and I think about all the Daily Wire brand deals are almost like extreme conservative brands that are like doubling down on wanting to be on the movement of free speech, Constitution, America first. You get the whole thing. And that's obviously a kind of a very extreme conservative movement. So, but what you're saying is if you were optimizing, and the way I would coach people too, is it would be foolish to ignore this, but it'd also be potentially, quenching of your actual self to not have other frames of measurement. So it's like, it could be a couple of things. 100%. What am I willing to do? And so like a lot of things are not black and white when making a decision. There's like maybe 10 questions you ask and you kind of score them. So I guess I'm just curious is there some cases though, where And maybe I'm not trying to talk about partying, nor being like full tilt conspiracy theorist or socially radical in your ideology. But is there ever a case, though, where brands would say, I would lean towards, you call it family friendly. If you're like nuclear family, you're probably called somewhat conservative these days, because it's an extreme, like even just to have. So like, geez, I can't believe you're married and like building a family. Like, it's just crazy. No matter what your beliefs or religion, but saying that, is there ever power in it? Like, do you ever some like brands?
I mean,
like,
100%. I mean, they're the brands that are like comfortable treading that line and saying like, no, we are going to go and partner with this creator who is being very loud about these social issues or these things or whatever. There's a lot of, you know, tremendous positive affinity that can come from that. But they also know that they're probably burning bridges with maybe the other side. I don't know what the other side is in this instance, but like, you know, that like if it is a kind of a two sides-ism type, you know, conversation here, then they've made that determination. They've planted their flag in the sand as a brand and say, this is, you know, the values that we have, and we're going to go and work with those types of people. And so I think that you're absolutely right. But most brands don't have the you know, bravery to do that is my experience. They just don't. They want to play it safe, especially the larger public traded companies. Like, they don't, you know, they don't have the ability to just kind of be, you know, reckless with their marketing strategy and just like erase, value of the brand overnight.
Got you. I'm curious. I just want to stay on this a little bit, and maybe you could help me and you could pitch yourself to me. I'm curious if you're thinking about describing yourself as a personal brand. Like, if I was pitching, would any of this stuff come up? So if I was to like, but you tell me like the metrics that the listener could write down. So if I would, what are the elements of like, say, your personal brand? So if I was thinking about mine, it'd be like, well, the pillar, the anchor, the cornerstone would be like video expert, 20 years of video experience, 17 of YouTube experience. And simply that authority, of course, is almost like maybe cost of entry, because if I'm going to talk about software or cameras or lenses, you want somebody with, that's obviously their lane, their experience. Okay. So any layer on top of that, like, would you say funny or irreverent? And I'm trying to think about myself. I don't know. Try to be a good teacher, dry humor. This stuff might not be seen. It's just going to cut through in the videos. But then if you lay it on top of that, would you even articulate family friendly? I would argue if somebody does profanity on the podcast, we bleep it out. We've recently, some episodes slipped through, not with crazy stuff, but a few things. But saying that, I would say that overall, you'd say Think Media is pretty family friendly. And maybe that's discerned because they're going to do their own audit. I guess it's kind of two lanes I'm asking you, is that even for personal branding, like if you're just like, who am I? What would you say the elements of that are? And then maybe through the brand's lens, that's what they, do they care about all that stuff? If they're just like, okay, he's safe and he does video and look at his results, okay, then check. Or is there things like, oh, we're like looking kind of for, we kind of want him to be a little bit quirky. Like there's like, and those things that maybe the listener could amplify as they even think about, yes, this could lead to brand deals and partnerships, but just this concept of finding your unique voice, your unique brand, what would that be for you? If you were to pitch a checklist of belief system, skill set, brand, you know, what are those right. elements?
The answer to the first part of the question is the brands who view influencer partnerships as transactional, they're at the very top here. It's like video expert has a large YouTube channel and an audience. That's fine. Let's partner with him. We're not going to do a huge extensive audit of his stuff. He seems like a good fit. So 100%. It's very surface level for a lot of those transactional type deals. For the brands that want to collaborate with you on a much more robust level. Maybe it's a 12-month ambassadorship and you're almost serving as an extension of their marketing team or something. And you're out there going to be on stage talking about whatever brand XYZ. Those are the brands that are going to care on a much more visceral level about those other intangibles, the funny, the family guy, the make sure that it aligns with the brand and things like that. And so that's been my experience is it just the deeper the partnership, the deeper they care about those types of things. You know, when I think about my own personal brand, the thing, when you started talking about like your, the way in which you would pitch yourself or view yourself, the first place my mind went for myself was like my audience. Like I am like, to some degree, it's hard to like detach my identity from what I believe is the psychographics of my audience. The way I've talked about this is that there's lots of like people who are educating creators right out there and, you know, on growth and like all this stuff too. But the difference with my audience is that the creators who follow me are looking to make money. They are looking to build a business from their creator business. And so I very much fundamentally look at myself in that way, that I am a creator educator for a very specific type of creator. And I think that is the big difference when I'm having these conversations. If I ever were, when I'm in these conversations pitching creator economy company X, and they say, Justin, how come it's so much more to work with you on your YouTube channel or on your newsletter or something than this other creator educator over here that has a larger audience that's getting more views? How come it's so much more to work with you? And then I tell them the story. I said, well, the psychographics of my audience is so much different. And so I think having an ability to kind of tell this story, have this dialogue that we're talking about right now, when you're in conversations with partners, is a total game changer.
I heard Tim Ferriss say that once, because early days of just audio podcast sponsors, based on downloads, if you just calculated a CPM, other people's podcast CPMs might be $10 or $15 or $20 or $25. And he would pitch brands and he's like, it's 200. It was just like a factor of significantly higher. But what he could say was, he's like, not only am I like a successful investor and in Silicon Valley and all this other stuff, but like the people who listen to my podcast are a whole different group of people, like in terms of affluence, in terms of seriousness, in terms of mindset, in terms of, and that's an interesting frame, because if you start thinking about who you are as some is going to definitely align with who you attract, because you're not going to attract something you aren't, at least to some degree. You might have fringe listeners, but as far as your core. So that's just like such a great frame. And you could probably ping pong between them, like getting, because I part of the reason I kind of spun off on this question was also just kind of thinking about, it's a new year. It's a good time to like even rebrand. And when I think about branding, it's not coming up with something new, but actually just articulating on paper and brainstorming like, what makes me me? What are some things that I could amplify? What are some things I'd want to incorporate in my, maybe not even just for pitching brands, like just self-awareness, but doubling down on those authentic truths about you, and even maybe amplifying some things like, I haven't highlighted this enough. And to your point, whether it's being business-minded, being more of a professional, being building a real business, being less of a dabbler, more dominating, wanting real. Yeah. So anyways, great conversation. Very, very powerful. A couple things I want to hit as we land.
Can I actually real quickly bookend this? I have one very quick thing to say on this, which is that your price, your value when you're a creator, whether it's for a brand deal, whether maybe you do coaching or something and you're helping people with something, or an educator, you're helping people get a transformation. Price is a story that you are telling. To do a 1 hour consulting call with me, I charge $1,000. And when people see that number, they instantly have, it communicates something to them. They say, what? $1,000 for an hour? I don't understand. That doesn't compute. Like, what could I possibly learn in an hour that would be worth $1,000 to me? This is, and then people go, wait a minute. Well, if he's charging $1,000, like, and there's lots of other people who have done this, that there must be value. There's testimonials here. Oh, this is interesting. It also, from your perspective, it communicates the types of customers or the types of clients that you want to work with. You want to work with probably someone who is taking their business seriously. They have the money to invest in something like this. I love going down these kind of rabbit holes when it comes to understanding your worth and how much you're charging for the various things that you're doing. Because it's a story. Price is a story, and where you fall in at oftentimes communicates your confidence in what you're selling.
Yeah. So powerful. And I really want to get your take kind of back on 2024 trend. Let me read this update from Forbes, and I'm curious. So they're talking about some influencer marketing trends for 2024, and they said, jump on the affiliate influencer bandwagon. So here's what their definition of this. And so one of my questions, I'll read all of this, is this whole YouTube shopping, TikTok shopping, and how that's going to maybe influence what you're doing. But this is what it says. It says, as social media platforms become increasingly integrated with e-commerce capabilities, influencer marketing is converging with affiliate marketing and moving beyond just awareness to trackable conversions. More and more influencers are posting reviews or demonstration in exchange for a commission per sale from their affiliate links. Well, that's been a thing. Affiliate marketing, huge for us. They said, so does it work? Put simply, yes, affiliate marketing is expected to grow significantly through 3031. That's the next 7 years. It currently drives 15 to 30% of e-commerce sales. And most executive level marketers who oversee affiliate marketing rank it as one of their top acquisition channels. Half of Gen Zers and millennials say they've clicked shopping links on a creator's social page, driving an average order cost from 100 to 150 from affiliate influencers. So strong affiliates are market savvy and close with their audience. To ensure success with this strategy, vet your influencers based on past affiliate programs they've done. Okay, so affiliate marketing is one thing. We talk about it all the time. We have Amazon links. We're a part of over 100 different affiliate programs. It's kind of one big bucket. What's also interesting is we just recently renegotiated a deal with a brand that's not paying us, but radically increased our affiliate, not paying us separately, but flipped to giving us a preferred rate in affiliates. So it's basically now a performance campaign and has produced a nice baseline of reoccurring revenue. And that's where they're at. It's also how they're adapting to this current landscape. And then you have this third bucket of YouTube shopping kind of being a buzz at VidCon and different places. TikTok shopping has been happening. I don't know if that's relevant for every creator, meaning if you're not doing like hair, makeup, clothes, some of those more forward facing, but that's blowing up. I asked my friend Modern Millie, she did an Instagram post and I commented, I was about something and I was like, nice cord jacket. Cord's a trend now. Cord hats are a trend. But it's like this jacket. And I was kind of like, I might buy that for my wife. It's kind of cool. And she was like, oh, I got it from TikTok shopping. So it's just one niche case, but I was like, that's so fascinating. Not a mall, not just online. But now you're scrolling on media and you are exposed to products. And sure enough, of course, the shopping integrated right there in Instagram. Anyways, I threw a lot at you there. I'm just curious from the expert, your thoughts on affiliates, maybe brand deals, sometimes including higher percentages there. And then how this, maybe a little bit of predictions or maybe what's happening now in terms of where YouTube shopping could go. They made links unclickable in comments and descriptions of YouTube shorts, kind of killing affiliate marketing, but then they're adding back shopping, which we don't have much flexibility on, but maybe that could eventually connect directly with brands. What are some of your expert perspective on what's happening in this entire vertical?
So I can speak a lot to this because my wife and I have done Amazon live streams, like live commerce, almost every week for the last 3 years. And it has grown into a super significant revenue driver of our business, something that didn't exist 3 years ago. So, we're super bullish on just the format of live commerce in general and the ability to upsell sponsorships on other platforms on live commerce. And that's something we do a lot where a brand will come inbound for a YouTube video or an Instagram, TikTok deal, whatever, and be like, hey, saw you also sell this on Amazon. Would you like us to add an Amazon Live integration into this type of thing? And so the ability to be flexible as a creator, and in your arsenal, have other content formats that the brand may not have much experience with, but you can kind of educate them, be the expert and kind of illustrate how it can be powerful to help them again, accomplish the objective of the campaign because you're asking about it now, right?
Let me interrupt you. Because I want to break this down. Number one, this is, I think people are getting pumped, but I'd love to hear the nuance of this. So what you're saying is, okay, first, Amazon Live is its own. It's on Amazon. It's live streaming on Amazon. If you're listening to this, you might be familiar that this really is big during like Black Friday, Cyber Monday, yep, and Amazon Prime Day. Like usually on the homepage, there's like a continuous, almost like QVC type of a stream, right, going from different creators. So what you're saying is you do this weekly, your wife and you, and then you have your integration of whatever products you're talking about on Amazon as affiliates. That's already super cool.
Yep.
But what you're saying is you're also pitching brands to sponsor that stream.
Yep.
So there's kind of a double dip happening. Is that accurate?
That's exactly accurate. So typically what the deals that we're pitching look like is they say, hey, we will, talk about up to 5 of your products, in an integrated fashion. So it's almost like an integrated YouTube video. So the video is 10 minutes long and we're going to talk about you for 90 seconds or 2 minutes or whatever. In this scenario, let's say we're talking, about 20 to 35 products on an average stream and the first 5 in the first five in the carousel, because there's a carousel below the video, right? And so each, you know, product we're talking about, like, kind of slides the carousel. It's kind of like, you know, everyone remembers QVC or home shopping. And so the sponsors, you know, products will be kind of that front loaded at the beginning of the carousel. And so, yeah, man, we've done integrated live streams on Amazon. We've done dedicated, like, just about that brand. It's been pretty sweet, dude.
And I want to ask, I know you can only comment if you listen to the Think Media podcast on YouTube. Would you like Justin to come back on just to break down Amazon live stream secrets or those type of things? Because that's kind of a side quest that's interconnected, but so fascinating. Let us know over there, or head over from audio to YouTube to give me your feedback, because we always want to hear from you for future episodes, guests, topics. One other question on that before we keep going, and I interrupted you. Do you repurpose that content at all? I want to encourage listeners. I have looked at it before. So you're pretty good at switching. You've kind of set up, there's the tech, and that's what we could unpack in a future episode. You kind of switch. You could, you know, you've developed a live show production that I'm sure you've kind of streamlined and got better at. But how do you repurpose it? So now it's not just, did it just live on Amazon Live, or then do you also use it somewhere else?
No, we've gotten pretty savvy about it, dude. So we have, my wife and I have kind of nonverbal cues now, that we have developed. So this is what happens is that, so we have B-roll that we shoot before the live stream. Okay. So we have footage of, like, the product or whatever we're talking about. And so what will happen is, like, camera A is my wife. We do it in the same room here. Like, this is my office. You can't really tell, but there's, like, she sits in that corner in the chair over there. And then I'm here. We both have two cameras, right? And we're using, like, OBS, which is streaming software. And so it'll be camera A will be on her, and then she'll be like, and now we're going to talk about blah, blah, blah. And on my other monitor right here, I have the Amazon, like, you know, idea list, which is what we curated, the carousel. And so she knows just by looking on my monitor what a product is next up in the queue, and then she'll start talking about it, and then I overlay silent B-roll footage while she's talking about it, right? And then when she's done talking about it, I transition back to maybe a multi-side view. And so what we do is that these are maybe 2 to 3 minute clips that we're talking about each product in an hour long live stream, and so I download the replay of that live stream once it's done, send it to our editor, chop it up into 2 to 3 minute videos, and then we upload it on YouTube with the Amazon link, you know, kind of as a review video on YouTube on a separate channel we created, as well as on Amazon influencers, because you can upload short videos on Amazon as well, and those show up on the product pages if any random consumer is visiting, man. And so we're repurposing the heck out of these videos, and it's been pretty sweet.
Man, that's a whole nother thing. So I don't know. I bet we're getting some yeses in terms of, like, talking about this more, but there's a whole other thing about those videos on Amazon, right? That are on the product page. What circumstances, do you know off the top of your head, does the creator of that actually earn affiliate commission if someone consumes that? Because I heard it was at like an event like Vid Summit. Somebody was like, yeah, I don't just have my YouTube videos, but I also upload them if they're kind of review based or something of a product on the Amazon page. And if I'm like the last click or the last consumption, someone lands on that page, you know, you scroll through the brand's photos, the brand's, commercial. You even come down to the review area and you see creator-based tutorials or reviews. You can earn affiliate income from those as well.
Yep, you can. You have to watch, I think it's 30 seconds. If someone watches at least 30 seconds of your video, I think it depends on the length of the video. So I'm not exactly sure the technical specs, but they have to watch a certain percentage. And then if you're the last clicked, video that, cause the idea is like that video influenced you to ultimately make the purchase, that in Amazon's eyes, like, oh, you watched that video and then you ultimately went, added it to cart and checked out. And so they credit the creator with that, affiliate sale. So, one thing I do want to just real quickly steer back to the initial question you asked about, like, TikTok shopping and just like the whole affiliate thing, because a lot of creators who are just starting out, especially on some of these newer shorter form platforms, who have not had a lot of experience doing sponsorships, they are so excited. They're like, oh, affiliate income, right? I'm making money off of, like, talking about a product on TikTok shop or whatever. And my fear about this is that affiliate only models trivialize the content creation piece of it. And so what I am a much bigger fan of is a hybrid model where there is some sort of flat upfront base compensation and then a kicker on the back end. Because when you're only looking at affiliate only sales, you are trivializing your influence. You are trivializing the fact that you're putting your stamp of approval on this brand and this product. And that shouldn't, you, that should not be worth zero. That should be worth something. There's a lot of creators who'd be like, yeah, but when everyone's doing it, like, you know, it reduces the value of like, of what I'm doing. And yes, I get that. But like, you have to be out there at the front of the pack, educating brands why they need to be compensating you, for the work that you're putting out there. And if they want to say, well, this other creator over here did it for just affiliates or whatever, fine. Don't let them gaslight you. Move on to the next brand.
Man. Okay. Some really good perspective and that is a great point. Like, affiliate marketing is a good starting point. I get 4%. For cameras, you know, if I talk about a camera on Amazon, but man, I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly. It's a way to get in the game. It's a way to start.
Yeah, even 100%, 100%.
But it is not the whole picture. You have a good word. It kind of trivializes your worth, your brand, what you want to build, and it's one piece of a holistic creator economy business as opposed to creatorpreneur business, YouTubepreneur, and not the whole picture. Well, man, there's so many rich nuggets. I definitely am curious people's biggest ahas and takeaways, and look forward to a future episode where we can maybe unpack some of those other opportunities. Obviously, the big idea here was brand deal, sponsorships, so much opportunity, massive opportunity for micro and nano influencers. But one of the big keys is learning how to craft a sponsorship pitch that no brand will ignore. Now, you have a deep dive class on this. It's solely free, right?
Yep.
If people want to check it out, you can go to branddealsclass.com. We'll, of course, link that up in the show notes. And that would be your next move. I think in 2024, you're ready to take this seriously, tap into some of this opportunity. Justin's the real deal. You've helped us and so many different verticals. We now, of course, are a bigger team. Mark just joined our team. You've been working with Mark Daisy, like just, and we're kind of even just ramping up even more so. But now we do go back. I think first time we met, Video Influencers days, you and Benji, it's probably coming close to a decade now.
It's been so cool to see, the evolution of your journey. And, one thing I will say that I really admire about you is that, you know, I've known a lot of creators along the way in the last, 15 years being on YouTube. And the creators who hired a manager, or the creators who delegated the business stuff to someone else, they're like, you know what? I just want to focus on the creative, being a creator, doing the creative stuff. I don't like that other stuff. Almost without exception, the creators that I've known who have had that mindset are either no longer creators. They had to go back and kind of get a normal job again. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but like, you know, they couldn't make it anymore, or they've really struggled over the last 15 years. But when I look at someone like you who took this stuff seriously, who decided that you did want to grow a team, I understand growing a team and is not for everyone, but like, you took it seriously, you understood the business side of the stuff, and you really grew this into something larger. I have so much respect for you, because I think that that's what it takes. If you want to survive, if you want to thrive in this new economy, you have to like understand that like, you are the person, you are the figurehead of this business, and the reason that people want to follow you, people want to collaborate with you, people want to partner with you. And so you can't just delegate this stuff. And so a lot, I talk about in this pitching masterclass, as you mentioned, we'll put links in the show notes. We talk about, how many followers do you actually need to start pitching brands? We talk about, why you keep getting ghosted or rejected when you DM or email brands, and what do you actually say in your pitches so that brands finally offer to pay you? So, really, really hope it's useful for people. And, really thankful for our friendship over the years.
Appreciate you, Justin. Thanks for your kind words. So go check that out. Branddealsclass.com. Link in the show notes. And then Justin, final roll call. Your YouTube channel, Creator Wizard, must subscribe. And super smart too, because you've specialized, it's a good, people could take a note from your playbook, in any vertical, having kind of that unique angle on the vertical. And so I can't think of any better resource than Creator Wizard. It is our go-to resource for all things brand deals. Anything else? Social media, final roll call.
I keep it simple. Go to the brand deals class, link and look me up on socials.
Awesome, Justin. Appreciate you. Think Media Podcast. Like, rate, subscribe. If you want to take a second to head over to the YouTube version to give us a little bit of feedback, always love that. And a review goes a long way on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Appreciate you. We will connect with you in a future episode of the Think Media Podcast.